Today is the 20th day of May. Welcome to the Daily Audio Bible. I'm Brian, and it is awesome to be here with you today as we gather in the place that we gather around the global campfire. And we come here to do what we do every day. Take the next step forward together. And that next step forward for a while now has led us back into the book of 1 Samuel, which is what we will continue to do today. And yesterday's reading, David spared King Saul's life because King Saul had come to use the bathroom in a cave that David was hiding in. But he spared his life and the king went back in repentance. And so let's see how that plays out. 1 Samuel chapters 26, 27, and 28 today. Then the Ziphites came to Saul at Gibeah, saying, David is hiding on the hill of Hakkelah opposite Jeshimon. So Saul, accompanied by 3,000 of the fit young men of Israel, went immediately to the wilderness of Ziph to search for David there. Saul camped beside the road at the hill of Hakkelah opposite Jeshimon. David was living in the wilderness and discovered Saul had come there after him. So David sent out spies and knew for certain that Saul had come. Immediately David went to the place where Saul had camped. He saw the place where Saul and Abner, son of Ner, the commander of his army, were lying down. Saul was lying inside the inner circle of the camp with the troops camped around him. Then David asked Ahimelech, the Hittite, and Joab's brother Abishai, son of Zeruiah, "Who will go with me into the camp to Saul?" "I'll go with you," answered Abishai. That night, David and Abishai came to the troops, and Saul was lying there asleep in the inner circle of the camp with his spear stuck in the ground by his head. Abner and the troops were lying around him. Then Abishai said to David, "Today God has delivered your enemy to you. Let me thrust the spear through him into the ground just once. I won't have to strike him twice." But David said to Abishai, "Don't destroy him, for who can lift a hand against the Lord's anointed and be innocent?" David added, "As the Lord lives, the Lord will certainly strike him down. Either his day will come and he will die, or he will go into battle and perish. However, as the Lord is my witness, I will never lift my hand against the Lord's anointed. Instead, take this spear and the water jug by his head and let's go." So David took the spear and the water jug by Saul's head, and they went their way. No one saw them, no one knew, and no one woke up. They all remained asleep because a deep sleep from the Lord came over them. David crossed to the other side and stood on top of the mountain at a distance. There was a considerable space between them. Then David shouted to the troops and to Abner, son of Ner, "Aren't you going to answer, Abner?" "Who are you who calls to the king?" Abner asked. David called to Abner, "You're a man, aren't you? Who in Israel is your equal? So why didn't you protect your lord the king when one of the people came to destroy him? What you have done is not good. As the Lord lives, all of you deserve to die since you didn't protect your lord, the Lord's anointed. Now look around. Where are the king's spear and water jug that were by his head?" Saul recognized David's voice and asked, "Is that your voice, my son David?" "It is my voice, my lord and king," David said. Then he continued, "Why is my lord pursuing his servant? What have I done? What crime have I committed? Now may my lord the king please hear the words of his servant. If it is the Lord who has incited you against me, then may he accept an offering. But if it is people, may they be cursed in the presence of the Lord. For today they have banished me from sharing in the inheritance of the Lord, saying, 'Go and worship other gods.' So don't let my blood fall to the ground far from the Lord's presence. For the king of Israel has come out to search for a single flea, like one who pursues a partridge in the mountains." Saul responded, "I have sinned. Come back, my son David. I will never harm you again because today you considered my life precious. I have been a fool. I've committed a grave error. David answered, Here is the king's spear. Have one of the young men come over and get it. The Lord will repay every man for his righteousness and his loyalty. I wasn't willing to lift my hand against the Lord's anointed, even though the Lord handed you over to me today. Just as I considered your life valuable today, so may the Lord consider my life valuable and rescue me from all trouble. Saul said to him, You are blessed, my son David. You will certainly do great things and will also prevail. Then David went on his way and Saul returned home. David said to himself, One of these days I'll be swept away by Saul. There is nothing better for me than to escape immediately to the land of the Philistines. Then Saul will give up searching for me everywhere in Israel, and I'll escape from him. So David set out with his 600 men and went over to Achish, son of Maok, the king of Gath. David and his men stayed with Achish in Gath. Each man had his family with him, and David had his two wives, Ahinoam of Jezreel and Abigail of Carmel, Nabal's widow. When it was reported to Saul that David had fled to Gath, he no longer searched for him. Now David said to Achish, If I have found favor with you, let me be given a place in one of the outlying towns so I can live there. Why should your servant live in the royal city with you? That day Achish gave Ziklag to him, and it still belongs to the kings of Judah today. The length of time that David stayed in Philistine territory amounted to 1 year and 4 months. David and his men went up and raided the Geshurites, the Girzites, and the Amalekites. From ancient times they had been inhabitants of the region through Shur, as far as the land of Egypt. Whenever David attacked the land, he did not leave a single person alive, either man or woman, but he took flocks, herds, donkeys, camels, and clothing. Then he came back to Achish, who inquired, Where did you raid today? David replied, The south country of Judah, the south country of the Jerahmeelites, or the south country of the Kenites. David did not let a man or woman live to be brought to Gath, for he said, Or they will inform on us and say, This is what David did. This was David's custom during the whole time he stayed in the Philistine territory. So Achish trusted David, thinking, Since he has made himself repulsive to his people, Israel, he will be my servant forever. At that time, the Philistines gathered their military units into one army to fight against Israel. So Achish said to David, You know, of course, that you and your men must march out in the army with me. David replied to Achish, Good, you will find out what your servant can do. So Achish said to David, Very well, I will appoint you as my permanent bodyguard. By this time, Samuel had died. All Israel had mourned for him and buried him in Ramah, his city, and Saul had removed the mediums and spiritists from the land. The Philistines gathered and camped at Shunem. So Saul gathered all Israel and they camped at Gilboa. When Saul saw the Philistine camp, he was afraid and his heart pounded. He inquired of the Lord, but the Lord did not answer him in dreams, or by the Urim, or by the prophets. Saul then said to his servants, Find me a woman who is a medium, so I can go and consult her. His servants replied, There is a woman at Endor who is a medium. Saul disguised himself by putting on different clothes and set out with two of his men. They came to the woman at night, and Saul said, Consult a spirit for me. Bring up for me the one I tell you. But the woman said to him, You surely know what Saul has done, how he has cut off the mediums and spiritists from the land? Why are you setting a trap for me to get me killed? Then Saul swore to her by the Lord, As surely as the Lord lives, no punishment will come to you from this. Who is it that you want me to bring up for you? the woman asked. "Bring up Samuel for me," he answered. When the woman saw Samuel, she screamed, and then she asked Saul, "Why did you deceive me? You are Saul." But the king said to her, "Don't be afraid. What do you see?" "I see a spirit form coming up out of the earth," the woman answered. And Saul asked her, "What does he look like?" "An old man is coming up," she replied. "He's wearing a robe." And Saul knew that it was Samuel, and he knelt low with his face to the ground and paid homage. "Why have you disturbed me by bringing me up?" Samuel asked Saul. "I'm in serious trouble," replied Saul. "The Philistines are fighting against me, and God has turned away from me. He doesn't answer me anymore, either through the prophets or in dreams. So I've called on you to tell me what I should do." Samuel answered, "Since the Lord has turned away from you and has become your enemy, why are you asking me? The Lord has done exactly what he said through me. The Lord has torn the kingship out of your hand and given it to your neighbor, David. You did not obey the Lord and did not carry out his burning anger against Amalek. Therefore, the Lord has done this to you today. The Lord will also hand Israel over to the Philistines along with you. Tomorrow, you and your sons will be with me. And the Lord will hand Israel's army over to the Philistines." Immediately Saul fell flat on the ground. He was terrified by Samuel's words and was also weak because he had not eaten anything all day and all night. The woman came over to Saul and she saw that he was terrified and said to him, "Look, your servant has obeyed you. I took my life in my hands and did what you told me to do. Now please listen to your servant. Let me set some food in front of you. Eat, and it will give you strength so you can go on your way." He refused, saying, "I won't eat." But when his servants and the woman urged him, he listened to them. He got up off the ground and sat on the bed. The woman had a fattened calf at her house, and she quickly slaughtered it. She also took flour, kneaded it, and baked unleavened bread. She served it to Saul and his servants, and they ate. Afterward, they got up and left that night. John 11, 1 through 54. Now a man was sick, Lazarus from Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. Mary was the one who anointed the Lord with perfume and wiped his feet with her hair, and it was her brother Lazarus who was sick. So the sister sent a message to him, "Lord, the one you love is sick." When Jesus heard it, he said, "This sickness will not end in death, but is for the glory of God, so that the Son of God may be glorified through it." Now Jesus loved Martha, her sister, and Lazarus. So when he heard that he was sick, he stayed 2 more days in the place where he was. Then after that, he said to the disciples, "Let's go to Judea again." "Rabbi," the disciples told him, "just now the Jews tried to stone you, and you're going there again?" "Aren't there 12 hours in a day?" Jesus answered. "If anyone walks during the day, he doesn't stumble, because he sees the light of this world. But if anyone walks during the night, he does stumble, because the light is not in him." He said this, and then he told them, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I'm on my way to wake him up." Then the disciples said to him, "Lord, if he has fallen asleep, he will get well." Jesus, however, was speaking about his death, but they thought he was speaking about natural sleep. So Jesus then told them plainly, "Lazarus has died. I'm glad for you that I wasn't there so that you may believe, but let's go to him." Then Thomas, called Twin, said to his fellow disciples, "Let's go too, so that we may die with him." When Jesus arrived, he found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb 4 days. Bethany was near Jerusalem, less than 2 miles away. Many of the Jews had come to Martha and Mary to comfort them about their brother. As soon as Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went to meet him, but Mary remained seated in the house. Then Martha said to Jesus, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother wouldn't have died. Yet even now I know that whatever you ask from God, God will give you." "Your brother will rise again," Jesus told her. Martha said to him, "I know that he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day." Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me, even if he dies, will live. Everyone who lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this?" "Yes, Lord," she told him. "I believe you are the Messiah, the Son of God who comes into the world." Having said this, she went back and called her sister Mary, saying in private, "The teacher is here and is calling for you." As soon as Mary heard this, she got up quickly and went to him. Jesus had not yet come into the village, but was still in the place where Martha had met him. The Jews who were with her in the house consoling her saw that Mary got up quickly and went out. They followed her, supposing that she was going to the tomb to cry there. As soon as Mary came to where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and told him, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother wouldn't have died." When Jesus saw her crying and the Jews who had come with her crying, he was deeply moved in his spirit and troubled. "Where have you put him?" he asked. "Lord," they told him, "come and see." Jesus wept. So the Jews said, "See how he loved him." But some of them said, "Couldn't he who opened the blind man's eyes also have kept this man from dying?" Then Jesus, deeply moved again, came to the tomb. It was a cave, and a stone was lying against it. "Remove the stone," Jesus said. Martha, the dead man's sister, told him, "Lord, there is already a stench, because he has been dead 4 days." Jesus said to her, "Didn't I tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God?" So they removed the stone. Then Jesus raised his eyes and said, "Father, I thank you that you heard me. I know that you always hear me, but because of the crowd standing here, I said this, so that they may believe you sent me." After he said this, he shouted with a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out!" The dead man came out, bound hand and foot with linen strips and with his face wrapped in a cloth. Jesus said to them, "Unwrap him and let him go." Therefore, many of the Jews who came to Mary and saw what he did believed in him. But some of them went to the Pharisees and told them what Jesus had done. So the chief priests and the Pharisees convened the Sanhedrin and were saying, "What are we going to do since this man is doing many signs? If we let him go on like this, everyone will believe in him, and the Romans will come and take away both our place and our nation." One of them, Caiaphas, who was the high priest that year, said to them, "You know nothing at all. You're not considering that it is to your advantage that one man should die for the people rather than the whole nation perish." He did not say this on his own, but being high priest that year, he prophesied that Jesus was going to die for the nation, and not for the nation only, but also to unite the scattered children of God. So from that day on, they plotted to kill him. Jesus therefore no longer walked openly among the Jews, but departed from there to the countryside near the wilderness, to a town called Ephraim, and he stayed there with the disciples. Psalm 117, Universal Call to Praise. Praise the Lord, all nations. Glorify him, all peoples. For his faithful love to us is great, the Lord's faithfulness endures forever. Hallelujah. Proverbs 15, 22 and 23. Plans fail when there is no counsel, but with many advisors they succeed. A person takes joy in giving an answer and a timely word. How good that is. Okay, so in the Gospel of John, we have the story of the raising of Lazarus today. A very, very famous story in the life of Jesus. And a really interesting, if not peculiar, story. Until we take a closer look. So let's start at the end. So, because we just read this, so we know Lazarus rises from the dead after he had been in the tomb for 4 days. But let's start looking at this after that. So people from the village and people from the nearby towns and villages are there in the village and they see this happen. And according to the Gospel of John, many believe in him, as you can imagine. Like if you're standing there at a tomb and a dead person rises to life, you're probably going to consider something or another, if not outright believe that God has sent this person at minimum, and maybe this is the Messiah. Maybe this is God incarnate. But not everybody who saw it believed. Some went back and reported to the Pharisees in Jerusalem what was going on, which caused a council to come together where ultimately they decide that Jesus must die. So in response to God raising a fellow Hebrew from the dead, he must die. Because if he doesn't stop all these signs, then everybody's going to believe in him, and that's going to destroy life as they know it. Their tenuous relationship with the Romans will be undone, and the Romans will squash the Hebrews and outlaw the Hebrew culture, which is exactly the opposite of what they're trying to hold together. Now let's go back into the story. We know from the Gospels that Martha and Mary and Lazarus are friends of Jesus, and that he sees them and spends time with them. And so when Mary and Martha send word to Jesus that their friend Lazarus is sick, it takes a minute for that word to get to Jesus because they couldn't pick up the phone. Like, there were no cell towers around to text anybody anything or post anything to social media. So they had to send word. And Jesus wasn't exactly nearby, because we already know that the Jewish elite, the religious leaders, are plotting to kill Jesus. And we've watched Jesus get into skirmishes where people are trying to stone him. And it's happening on a regular basis at this point. And so Jesus now has to withdraw away from the Jewish people, away from his own people, because there's all kinds of stuff brewing. And he's not safe to just move around anymore. And so word gets to Jesus where he is, and he tells his disciples that Lazarus is sick, and they don't want to leave. Like, you can tell right in the Gospel of John, like, they're not excited to go back to Judea. They're not excited to get back around the Jewish people who want to kill them. But eventually Jesus tells them, let's go back to Judea again. And they said, and I quote from the Gospel of John, Rabbi, just now the Jews tried to stone you and you're going there again? And so we get a glimpse into what the holdup is. But ultimately Jesus tells them he's going to wake what Lazarus up. And they're like, well, if he's asleep, he's going to get better. And then he tells them Lazarus is dead. And I'm going back. And so one of his disciples, Thomas, says, let's go too, that we may die with him. So we can see that they knew and felt they were in danger because people were plotting to kill them. And so we can see before and after this event, the raising of Lazarus, people wanted to kill them. But Jesus returns. And by the way, Bethany, where this happens, is on the Mount of Olives. It is literally just a couple of miles from Jerusalem. Would have been just a couple of miles away from the temple. So it's not like Jesus was visiting some far-flung backwater village where Lazarus lived, but he didn't want to go there because the Jews wanted to kill him. He was going right back into the thick of it. And then the story turns quite personal because he's on the path walking back to Bethany. Word moves ahead of him that the teacher is coming into the village. Martha jumps up and runs to find him, and she sees him and she falls down before him, and the words that fall from her lips are so human, so identifiable, so like us. Jesus, if you had just been here, he wouldn't have died. Oh, now we're in the story because that's all of us. How many hundreds, if not thousands of times have we not had that sentiment, if not those exact words? If you had just shown up, if you had just been here, that wouldn't have happened. If you had just been here, this wouldn't be happening to me. And Jesus talks to her about Lazarus rising, and she's like, she knows he's going to rise at the last day. And Jesus is speaking to her about believing him. In fact, he says, I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me, even if he dies, will live. And it's almost as if Martha doesn't, it's just not quite registering. She's like, yep, yes, Lord, I believe you're the Messiah. And then after this scene, we see Martha going back to her sister Mary and saying that the teacher's looking for you. And so Mary comes and she runs out to Jesus and she does the same thing. If you had just been here, this wouldn't have happened. And so Jesus is standing there and there are villagers around, and there's Mary and Martha, and they're weeping bitter tears of suffering and loss, and the people around are crying, and it is just such a rich human moment of loss. And it's in that moment that we have the shortest verse in the Bible. Jesus wept. Jesus wept along with them. Which is interesting because he wept along with them even though he knew what was going to happen in like a few minutes. And he asked where Lazarus is laid, and they lead him to the tomb. And then he asks for the stone to be rolled away from the tomb, which is like a precursor to the resurrection of Jesus himself. He's asking them for them to roll away the stone. And Martha comes and she's like, he stinks though. Like, Jesus, he's been in there like for 4 days. So if we roll away the stone, he stinks. And the Gospel of John tells us Jesus' sort of state of mind. He was deeply moved in his spirit and troubled. And again, it's like, what is that all about? He knows what's about to happen. Even going back to the original Greek here, we find that anger is a part of what Jesus is feeling. What is he mad about? What is he troubled over? We get glimpses when he asks for the stone to be rolled away, and Martha comes to tell him that her brother is dead and decaying. And then Jesus says, and I quote, "Didn't I tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God?" And so maybe that's part of what's troubling Jesus. Just didn't have to be that way. All of the tears and suffering and loss, all of the grief and pain, all of the injustice, all of the ways of mankind. It was never supposed to be like that. And it didn't have to be that way if they would just believe. He had been on earth, moving around the countryside, revealing the kingdom of heaven. healing the brokenhearted, setting the captive free, restoring sight to the blind, opening up deaf ears, and speaking of the kingdom, revealing that there is another way to do this human thing. A better way, a way that it was intended to be. All you have to do is believe. And in response, so many are conspiring to kill him, and now he is among his friends saying, "Believe, just believe." And so they roll away the stone, and Jesus calls Lazarus forth. And Lazarus appears in the entrance to the cave. And the shock and awe of that moment must have been iconic, to say the least. In response to Lazarus appearing in the opening of the grave, alive and still bound up in his grave clothes, well, I quote from John, "Many of the Jews who came to Mary and saw what he did believed in him. But some of them went to the Pharisees and told them what Jesus had done." So in the face of this, we look at Jesus, and we who believe, we believe in Jesus, but we look at this scene and go, what else would the Lord have needed to do? Like, he had shown and revealed what the power of the kingdom was to heal what is broken and restore what has been taken and lost. He has told them that the way that they're living is backward to the way that we were intended and created to live. That there was a better way. A better way. A way we were made. And some believed, and others plotted to kill him. So when you hear this story, do you believe? Do you believe? Do you believe it? Because this story encapsulates our own story and the story of our faith. That which has died can live even though it has died. And so think about it, like, let's bring this really near to ourselves. What has died in you? What has died in you? Because it was beaten to death by life, or it was broken by betrayal, or you gave your heart and it didn't work out, and so you lost your heart. Here's where it gets really personal. Could what has died in you live again, even though it has died? What if we began to hear the echoes of Jesus? "Didn't I tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God?" The thing is, like, our faith doesn't work without resurrection in it. If Jesus died on a cross and did not rise, I mean, that was the linchpin. That was the thing that completely transformed the Apostle Paul. And we have not gotten into Paul's letters yet. We will. But Paul, or Saul, was a Pharisee. He would have been in on this kind of conversation had they happened at the same time. Like, he would have been there saying, this guy has to die. Because Paul was persecuting the people who believed. Until he met the resurrected Christ, which changed everything. The story of our faith is from death to life. What has died can live even though it has died. And so let's give some thought to the things that have died within us and truly consider, do we believe that even we are moving from death to life?
Lord, I was there, buried deep. These weary bones were fast asleep. I heard your voice calling me. This heart of stone began to beat. Up from my past, up from the grave. I'll never be the same. Oh, I'll never be the same. My testimony from death to life.
to my lungs. You breathe new life. You say my name. I come alive. Up from my past, up from the grave. I'll never be the same. Oh, I'll never be the same. My testimony from death to life. You fill me up with all the light. My testimony out of the dust. You raise me up like Lazarus. Like Lazarus.
New heart, new soul, new eyes. I've been resurrected. New start. I've been resurrected. I've been resurrected.